Hello and welcome to the Owen Podcast. My name's Keith Smyth and I'm the Android team lead here. And Owen Podcast, which should have been introduced before me because I'm good at this, is Outwear's podcast all about the mobile industry. And today I'm joined by some people who are much higher rank than I am, so I'm feeling rather nervous. I'm joined today by...
Danny Gorog.
Pete Collins.
And Lucia Vong.
Cool. And I emphasize the word mobile today because we're going to talk about mobile strategy, the mobile industry. See, we're bringing it right back around circle. I just wanted to kick off with a little bit of a statistic that I got from the Benedict Evans show, little slideshow that I saw. In 2020, 80% of adults will have smartphones. And then to paraphrase a little bit, those smartphones are supercomputers. And then to take it a bit further, those supercomputers are watching you because they are full of sensors. So it's a really, really interesting time that we live in where we all are sort of we're all customers of the tech industry. We're all going mobile and it's going throughout the whole world, even in Africa and all the countries. It's just that mobile's everywhere now and it's about to explode. So what do you need? You need a mobile strategy. And I'm glad I'm joined by you three because my mobile strategies are not great. Write an app. So I'll open this question up to the table. How do you come up with a mobile strategy? Is that where you begin?
Who wants to take this one?
It's a big question.
Just answer the whole question.
We charge clients a lot of money to answer, and we're just going to answer for free here in 40 minutes.
Go.
Pete.
Well, look, I mean, it depends. We get a lot of different clients that come to us, and they're different. They've got kind of partway through that journey of understanding how they're going to use mobile, or they've never considered it as a channel before, or how they might use it alongside any other existing channels that they talk to their user base. So I think a lot of the answer to that question comes down to what they do or don't have currently. I also think a huge part of it, and I know we spend a lot of time talking about this, is whether mobile is actually right for them in the first place. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people just at the moment assume that they should have a mobile app or a mobile strategy or to be doing something with
it. Well, I think it's... I don't think the question is mobile. I think mobile has to be right for everyone. Like, it's like, is web the right strategy? You know, pre the internet... Mm. When the internet was out, did you need to have a website? Did you need to have an internet strategy? Well, of course, I mean,
so it's whether it's more mobile web or native.
Well, I think that's part of the question that the strategy would answer is what is the implementation? That's really an implementation detail. Yeah. You know what? I think the question that business needs to ask is what is the value of mobile for my business? Mm-hmm. So.
I agree. I think especially Keith, because you mentioned the Benedict Evans. Show, or rather, his recent.
So we should just say Benedict Evans is actually an analyst. He's an English analyst. He now works for Andreessen Horowitz, which is one of the big VC firms in Silicon Valley, and he's kind of at the forefront of his opinion pieces and his analysis of the industry and the stats he puts together and how he looks at the various stats.
I think lots of charts,
but lots of kind of poignant insight charts.
Yeah, like the conclusion he draws is that mobile is actually becoming something like infrastructure, like electricity and steel. So if we look at it from that perspective, then it's essential that every business has some sort of mobile strategy or some way to embrace mobile and use that technology because, if we go down that train that it will be available for everyone in a very few number of years, then... If you don't do it, you're kind of you're probably
you'll get left
dead
behind very quickly. Yeah. But I think you've got to really consider, as well as a big part of it, is this going to be valuable to my business? Is how do users currently engage with my brand, and is mobile going to be the best way for them to do it, or are they currently missing out on a mobile product that the users can't engage with my brand or my company in that way? So I think looking at your existing user base, what your future user base is likely to be like, who you are trying to target and who your audience is going to be, that's a huge part of understanding what your strategy is.
Yeah. I think the first thing that most businesses need to do. And the businesses that we work with, you know, kind of, I'd call it the sort of the big end of town, the tier one businesses, they are already doing this. They have a good handle on their analytics. But for any kind of general business, you need to look at your, assuming you've got a website, you need to start by looking at the stats on your website and saying, how much of my traffic is coming from mobile devices? And if that's 10%, then you're probably not, you know, you've probably got a couple of years you don't have to panic today. Yeah. But if that's, you know, 40 and 50 and 60% and growing week after week, day after day, week after week, then it's time to start thinking about it. I mean, a good example is I know a guy who's in the fashion business, and he told me they've got a mobile website, and he was talking to me about, does he need an app? And I said to him, well, how much of your traffic is coming from mobile now? And he's like, over half. I'm like, well, he's like, we've got a responsive website. And I'm like, well, that's something. But I guess the question is, when is the point that you need to go from nothing to something, and then something to something that's really specific and serves and caters for the market that you are working for?
Exactly. Like, a website is an okay experience on a mobile. A responsive website that's designed to scale properly and react quickly is better than just a normal website. But then you go the next step and you go a native app, and now you're up at the gold end of the experience you can do for your user.
And my sense is that in the next year or so, when things like Apple Pay, and I know PayPal have got some integration with the S5 fingerprint scanner, when the process of buying is as easy as, you know, tapping your finger onto a sensor, you're going to see the demand for mobile, for native apps increase, because it's all about conversion. And if you can convert someone quickly and easily, then they're more likely to buy from you, and you're likely to have higher revenue. That's the game.
It's an interesting point you make as well, is because a huge part of it from my perspective is, particularly people that might be new to it, is timing of when they create a mobile product. In relation to what's happening in the industry. So I think, as Danny's just said, like, you know, there's going to be a whole load of, you know, point of sale retailers or people that, you know, do a lot with quite old fashioned payment technology that need to, well, already should have long ago started thinking about how their mobile payment strategy is going to differ now that Apple Pay has been announced. So I think aligning your strategy or how you're going to deliver some sort of mobile product or get involved in a mobile side of, you know, your business has to relate very closely to what's actually happening in the industry itself and timing your entry into the industry, right?
Yeah. And there's another really interesting aspect of that, where you're looking at your users and how they engage with your business or your products, is that most new technologies have to do things the way that people are used to doing them first, and then over time slowly change the way that people do things to make it easier, because it's very hard for a consumer or a customer to just change the way that they do things normally. So at the moment, we still think of payments as something that, you know, we have to give something over at the cash register. And that's why, you know, that probably is taking a little bit longer than we'll, you know, expect. But then once it happens, once it becomes really, really easy, then everyone's going to expect it. Like, I know, Danny, you were talking about how once a bank gets on board Apple Pay, they're all going to jump on board.
Oh, totally. I mean, we've got Apple Pay working here in the office. And,
it's
very cool.
It's a game. It's just a complete game changer But that, I mean, that's a bit different from, you know, that's from the consumer side rather than the business working out what their mobile strategy is. But I think all this stuff is all game changing stuff. I think if you're not investing in building software to suit your business, then you're investing in the wrong spot. Like retail, I think retail is a really good example. This, like, traditional retail, like Myers and David Jones and stuff. You know, I think traditionally they haven't spent a huge amount on technology. You know, they've worried about what their point of sale system is, but they were very late to the game in terms of online shopping. And you remember the whole stuff around Harvey Norman and Myer and David Jones coming online late, and, you know, trying to regulate online shopping here and making sure that if you bought something from overseas, you pay GST so that they were price competitive and stuff. They're being killed. They're absolutely being killed. And the reason they didn't jump into e-commerce to begin with, because it wasn't a core business for them, and they never saw it as a threat. And they, you know, when they were doing well in retail, you know, it was only a percent or 2% or 3%. And suddenly, like, over a couple of years, everyone gets a PC and everyone gets the internet and then everyone gets a mobile phone. And suddenly, like, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50% of retail transactions are now happening online. And suddenly they've got a problem, because you can't change a business. You can't pivot a business that quickly. No. And that's why it's important to start thinking about this stuff early rather than when it's too late. So if you're seeing that 50% of your traffic is coming from mobile, it's almost kind of too late to start. You know, it's not too late, but you got to start doing this early. You've got to look at the trends.
Yeah, you've missed the early schedule. You've got to catch up now.
Yeah, if you're seeing, you know, mobile growing quickly, it's time to start thinking about that and investing in that. Mm. Because, yeah, if you don't, you're dead.
Do you think it's too late at this point for your Myers?
I think it depends on the industry. So the question, and this really goes to UX and experience, you know, how good is good enough? How good do you have to have a product so that it's sticky enough so your customers don't leave and go to another product? So banking app's a good example. Would I change banks if I wasn't happy with my service provider's internet banking app? Would I move banks because of it?
I absolutely would.
And so would I.
Yeah.
Because
you have.
Yeah, right. There you go. It comes back to how a user engages with a brand. If mobile is the first channel that they use, I mean, I reckon of every 10 times I log in to see, you know, the status of my bank accounts, not even, let's say 100 times, I reckon 99 of those times are via my mobile device. And maybe once out of that 100, I'll go via a desktop browser and log in.
Mm. I've actually forgotten how to log in via the web route. Yeah. I purely just use the app on my phone now.
And so, you know, as an example, I think it's getting better slowly, but I bank with Westpac.
Yeah.
And historically, I don't think that's been a great app.
My dad used to work for Westpac.
Maybe from Westpac.
Well, I hope they are. I've told them.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, for me, that was always a really frustrating experience that a company that must have known that a huge amount of their traffic was coming via that channel. You know, millions of customers are going to be engaging with their brand and Westpac as a company through that channel. And it was always a substandard experience. And for me, when you see other banks like the Combac app's really nice. ANZ have got a very nice app now, which you should go download. but for me, that's absolutely enough of a driver to change.
So why haven't you changed?
I've set up an ANZ bank.
Oh, you have?
Now.
Okay.
So absolutely. Right. So I actually bank with folks, but I'm about to close down my Westpac account.
So I've got a Westpac. I'm interesting. I bank primarily with ANZ, and I've been a huge GoMoney fan. It's still one of my favourite apps. But I've also got a Westpac credit card because of the offer that they gave me for the credit card, and I got points. But I'm getting close to just closing it down and getting an ANZ account because the experience is so terrible. I mean, they don't even have a PIN login, and it just drives me crazy.
It's one of those things that didn't exist before, and now it's like, if you don't have it.
Yeah, but it's not the PIN. So the PIN login, the fact that it's all kind of web views, and it just feels clumsy, and it's not an experience I like doing, so I don't do it. And that means I'm not checking my credit card regularly, and that means I get bill shock every 30 days. You know, like I get it, you know, like, oh my God, how much did I spend?
Yeah, like I think for me. I think for me as well, mobile has become like such a hot topic over the last, you know, 5 years, is that if that's not a great experience from a consumer's perspective, it tarnishes the rest of a brand, essentially, from their point of view. Like, I don't care. Westpac might have a great home loan system. But for me, the fact that their mobile stuff isn't great, like, I think, oh, they're not very forward-thinking. They're not very innovative as a company. They're not very... So it has this, from my perspective, has this kind of huge impact on how I view the rest of the business. So I think... looking at it conversely from a business's point of view is that I think it's becoming more and more and more important that they really focus on that is a key channel from a consumer's perspective as to this is what they're going to think of my brand.
Yeah.
Well, and they have to start getting it right and think of that first.
Yeah. And I think the change now is that mobile is not just another channel for your brand or your business to be presented to people. It's actually another product or service that you're offering. And if your service or your offering is substandard, that reflects on your brand and your business. So as a top, you know, one of the top companies in Australia, you expect that their product that they're selling you, which is essentially, you know, the banking service, has to be the best. And
can you imagine a bank having a branch that kind of had, you know, dirty floors and you couldn't quite see the teller through the window because it was, you know, can you just imagine that experience? Well, that's it. That's the experience that you give customers. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the experience you give customers if you develop terrible UI and a terrible system. That's what they get.
Yeah.
And that's, I think the banks get it now, and I think you'll see the banks who are a little bit behind on that stuff catch up, because they, I think if you look over time at their the budgets they've had for their, you know, their mobile products, that's increasing quickly, and the budgets they've got for other things like upgrading retail stores is probably dropping off. So that's one driver, and the other driver is it just makes business sense to migrate your channel onto mobile, onto a digital, a kind of a digital platform. Like it's much cheaper to transact with people in a digital world than it is to transact with people in a retail world. That's the same with retailers as well. You know, instead of operating 100 stores in every shopping centre in Australia and paying huge amounts in rent, you can drive all that through a single interface with kind of a few warehouses around the country. And it's just sounds a lot more efficient. Sounds a lot more efficient to me.
Sounds like Amazon.
Well, it sounds a bit like Amazon. Yeah, that's right. Well,
but it's
so there's not just so there's kind of lots of parts of the equation that can mean, you know, mobile makes sense. The other thing, the other big, big area I think we're going to see is B2B apps, and we don't do very many business to business apps. So this is apps that let your employees be more productive. We're starting to do a couple now, but I think there's going to be a huge focus on the UX and UI on those apps because, again, if you can make your employees more productive by giving them access to the systems they need in a better way, they'll do better work.
Yeah,
and they'll do it more efficiently.
You don't want to try and solve a problem by causing a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So typically, like, when you introduce a system into a business, you don't really care about the user interface. You just, you know, if you've seen like the screens, you know, if you sort of, if you buy something at Myer, you turn around the screen, you're like, oh my God, that's, I'm going to vomit.
Yeah.
But if you can make that stuff better, I think you can, so you'll see there'll be huge improvements, huge gains in efficiency.
I think that goes back to if you're putting together a mobile strategy, you have to look at what are you actually trying to achieve? And there are some things that mobile is just really good for, and you know, improving process is one of them because it simplifies things and it puts things it's faster, it's portable. Yeah, exactly. So all of these you know, features of mobile actually the solves problems, and I think that's where you need to start as a business. If you're thinking about your mobile strategy, what are the problems you need to solve, or what are your customers doing, what are they having trouble doing, what can you actually fix? And that's the question you ask, and then you look at who your users are and where they come from, what technologies they're using, and that's really the start of how you come up with something that's good. You shouldn't be saying, I need an app, it should do these things, and trying to retrofit that to your business. It should be starting from what you're trying to
start
achieve.
From the problem.
Start from the problem, yeah.
An interesting part of that, and it's quite a specific part of mobile strategy, but it's something that really interests me, and I'm keen to kind of talk about it, is which versions of OS you target as part of your mobile strategy. Like, I think that's a big kind of question for a lot of companies that are thinking about creating mobile.
So now we're going to assume that you need an app.
Yep.
We'll assume that you've got a bit of your mobile strategy done and decided that you need an app.
Yeah. And is this part of your mobile strategy, would you say?
Yeah. So you need an app. And now we want to talk about devices and platforms and OSs.
So, I mean, we obviously get a lot of clients that have, you know, and obviously it's much more prevalent in Android because of the just fragmentation of
Don't OS. Use that word. That's a dirty word.
That's a dirty word. Like that. But it's true.
Toxic health stew is the right word, right?
I mean, particularly in that OS, we see a lot of clients and companies and businesses that have to target, you know, a lot of legacy versions of the OS to cater for the fact that their user base is spread out.
Exactly.
A lot of those versions. But obviously, conversely, when you try and come up with some sort of product or strategy that caters for the masses, inevitably it means you're going to spend more money, it's going to take longer, you're going to kind of not be able to roll out as quickly, as be as responsive to the market. There's a lot of implications that come with trying to target all of your user base. So I guess a really interesting thing that I kind of think about a lot is, where do you draw the line in terms of, okay, by targeting, let's say, Lollipop and KitKat, we can target 50% of our user base. By the time we release this app, you know, Lollipop will have been out for 6 months. Do we think, you know, if we project forward adoption rates of the OS, do we think there's going to be a critical mass of our users that we've targeted the right versions?
Yeah. With Android, it's a bit tricky.
There's a whole kind of minefield of things that you...
It's always been quite a slow take-up with Android, but they've done a lot of things this time that are more Apple-like, which I really applaud them for, which is they've released a developer preview of Lollipop, which is amazing. So people...
Didn't they do that in the past?
They've never done it.
Right.
I think version 1...
Right
before version 1 was a developer preview, but until like since then, it's just been this one. Mm-hmm. So people have had time to actually get their apps up to speed. They've gone and released the Nexus 6, which is way wider than the normal standard phone. So that's going to be interesting. So I've seen a lot of Nexus 6 specific releases coming out for apps that are quite visual, because it's just much wider than what people are used to. There's no scaling going on. It's using all that screen real estate. And the Nexus 9 is a 4:3 ratio now, whereas our tablets have just normally been a different ratio. I can't remember. It's like
16:9.
Yeah. So it's by releasing early, they've sort of allowed people to sort of catch up before it comes out. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that when Lollipop finally hits, we're going to get a much larger adoption rate than before.
Yeah, I mean, and that's hopefully that's great, because it'll mean,
that will mean we can aim higher.
Yeah. But I mean, I think I find that really interesting, because clients, you know, they only have a certain budget to spend on an app,
exactly,
or a mobile strategy, yeah. And you know, they need it to be in market by a certain time.
And they want so the biggest bang for your buck.
That's a huge thing that they need to consider, is because every time you target a legacy version of it, it adds a level of complexity, of testing, of design, of development. And it's, you know, it's quite a specific part of strategy, but I think it's really important as well, because it can have these huge consequences about how and when and where you launch your mobile product, which parts of your user base you're targeting. You know, that's... interests me. And
yeah,
I don't know if anyone else has thoughts on that.
There's been a big shift since I started here. Like, when I started, Android was going back to the version 2.3s and the 2.8s, and there were big problems back in those versions. There's just things that will just crash the whole thing out. But nowadays, it's usually version 14 and up, which gets you, I think it's about Ice Cream Sandwich version 14, so 4.0, so which targets you about 80% of the user base at the moment, which is pretty big.
So if you target 4 and above.
4 and above,
you reckon you'll get about 80%.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously that depends on what industry you're in and what your users, like what demographic your users are as well.
I think with iOS, if you target iOS 7 and above, you're over 90% of the user base.
I'd kill for that.
So that's
good.
Well, I mean, that's... Yeah, and that's one of the advantages of iOS and having a closed platform, the fact that they can push out updates to lots of phones. Mm. But I think we all agree that the fewer versions of any OS you support, the better and more efficient it is.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's kind of about the problem our clients have is they've got subscribers who are paying the money. And they're on old platforms, and they're like, well, if we cut them off, then we won't collect the money.
Yep, we lose that revenue.
So
you've upset a customer.
That's the kind of the delicate balance they walk. Yeah.
But then conversely, I would think, oh well, you know what? Fair enough. They're a forward thinking. They're an innovative brand. They're a smart.
But most
want to keep progressing.
But most people don't think. You know, they're like, they've got their phone. You know, it's your grandmother. She's got her iPhone 4, and it's running iOS 4, and she's got a subscription to something, and she doesn't want to upgrade it, and she just, you know, so
change.
So there's that real. Is it? You know, that's why it's difficult. It's going to get increasingly difficult like that. You know, as you know, I think the. If you look over time at the improvements in the OSs, they're slowing down. Like we geeks might think, oh, the underlying APIs are cool, and the technology's cool, but from a user perspective, it's flattening out, and it's refinement rather than revolution.
Yeah. The user experience isn't changing an awful lot. Yeah. There's not a big they've moved my cheese everywhere.
Correct.
There's a big
iOS 6 to 7 was huge, and iOS 7 to 8 is minimal. You know, it looks the same, and it's a bit similar. I mean, there has been changes, I guess, with material design.
I think it'll be even less, though, between 5 and whatever the next version of Android will be.
But I also think the other side of it is, as users get, you know, those users who are hanging on to their legacy iPhone 3GS or whatever, they will also drop off as well. So people are updating their phones more and more regularly, and this will become less and less of a problem. It's a problem now because we're kind of in a middle phase. And it's grown so quickly. Mobile's grown so quickly that people aren't ready to spend
that
much.
So there are two points. I think the thing that's nice about mobile, which is different to PCs and tablets, is that there's this, especially in Australia, there's this natural cycle of getting a new phone every couple of years when you sign a new contract. It's just built into the price. So there's that natural kind of
progression.
And my second point. what was my second point? I'll come back to it.
Okay.
What about from how do we help our clients, Pete? work through what their objectives are.
Remember my second point. With the mobile strategy, you need to have a budget to upgrade the app. You can't just you can't just set and forget.
Yeah.
So, and I would be as I'm almost tempted to say the cost to keep it updated is as much as it cost you for the first build.
Yeah.
You know, so if you are going to put aside some money to build a mobile app, I think you've also got to put aside another bucket of money every year in the budget to make sure it's updated, make sure it's, you know, it's it works on the latest platforms, make sure it's designed for the latest platforms, make sure you take advantage of the latest features. So that's important.
And that's, I mean, that's a good point you make as well about more than just the cost of the actual app. I mean, because a huge part of obviously a mobile strategy is coming up with a great app, but if nobody knows about your app or you don't promote your app or you don't do anything with your app, it's all very well having a great app, but it's not going to do anything. So
it's a long-term strategy as opposed to a short-term.
You have to think about a product in terms of, you know, the whole suite of the rest of your products that you might create, how you're going to market that, how you're going to promote it, how you're going to keep refreshing the content and engaging users and driving users towards that platform. There's so many other things you need to think about as part of your mobile strategy, over and above just creating an app. And like you say, well, a big part of that's maintaining your app as well. So, but I guess we're like typically how of the kind of clients that we work with, I don't know, maybe Danny, you'll know a bit more about this. When they come to us and they say they have X amount of budget to build an app, as a percentage of what they usually kind of set aside to do all of that other stuff, like marketing and promoting their app?
Yeah, I think it's small.
You think it's small?
I'm always staggered how small it is. I see, you know, we fight with clients over, you know, dollars, and then you go and see them once they've built the app, they go and put, they run TV commercials, you know, for like 6 months at 7 o'clock. On all the channels and put up big billboards. And it's like, well, if you're just taking a little bit of that budget and put it into, you know, building this feature or letting us do another round of UI changes and stuff, you'd get better impact. I've just moved, it's interesting, I've just moved, I think we might have talked about this on the podcast, PowerShop. Have we talked about PowerShop, the electricity power company?
I don't think so.
I think
have you seen the ads for PowerShop?
We may have talked about it very briefly.
Right. So PowerShop is a new power company. You sign up and they basically port your power, for if you're with Origin or AGL, they just port your power bill to... Oh, no, Pete talked about it because he doesn't have a smart meter.
I was calling him a hippie.
Yeah, that's right. So I've got a smart meter at home and I use PowerShop and it is awesome. So A, this is a company... I moved because this company had an app. So Origin don't... Not that I know. They don't have an app. They never advertise the app. The bills are very complicated.
That's a good point. They didn't advertise it. So
I think I've been to their website once and it confused me. So this PowerShop comes along. You know what? They've got an app. They've got some cool marketing. I've heard about it. I'll try them out. And the app is just cool. So first of all, with a smart meter, you can see how much power you used every day, the day after. You can see how you're tracking from day to day. And then it gives you this really cool graph of what times of the day you're using the most power. But the cool thing about it is they give you the opportunity that the difference with PowerShop is you basically pre-buy your power. So instead of paying in arrears at the end of the quarter for your power, you kind of pre-buy it. So that's you can buy it, and the further in front you buy it, the cheaper it is. So if I want to buy power for, like, you know, December today, it'll be cheaper than when I buy it in December. Because I'm basically, you know,
it's like prepaying.
It's prepaying. It's it's really interesting. And on Melbourne Cup Day, they had this like a push notification, Cup special, power, and they kind of change the way you think about power, and they turn it into kind of units that you pay for units rather than think about it as kilowatt hours. So you know, buy 55 units, the Melbourne Cup special at, you know, 18 cents a unit, which is, I know, is about, you know, a cent cheaper than I normally pay. So I'm like, all right, buy. So they just got me to spend I don't even think about it. Like, without thinking, I spent like $50, just buy all through the app, got my credit card, no putting in anything. And that is just super cool. So it's a different strategy. It's a strategy around mobile, and they're getting me to spend money just without doing much thinking.
Pay as you go power. Wow.
Yeah.
I like it.
Very cool.
It's not just to round that conversation off. If you don't pre-buy your power, you just go onto the default power plan, and then they send you. Then they just bill you on arrears.
So the fallback is
is just the old way. Yeah.
That's really good because, like, you know how.
If you want to sign up, let me send you a link because I get $75.
Yeah.
So they even get that. Yeah. They get the referral frame. Yeah. But it's like what I was saying before, where you allow people to do things the way they are used to, but you provide new ways for them to do it. And when they realize how easy it is, they slowly transition. They're like, well, why don't I do it like that instead? Because it's cheaper for me, but it's also cheaper for them because they get all this money up front. So that's the type of thing that, you know, businesses should be thinking about when they're forming their strategy around mobile is how can it improve their business, but also how can it improve the actual experience?
But yeah, but I think PowerShop's an amazing example of how a mobile strategy has made a really big difference for their business, because otherwise they're just another energy provider and they just, you know, they've got a different name, but...
Consumers place so much weight on mobile as a channel. Like if they can easily do stuff through the device that's in their pocket that they carry around every day.
Oh, I think it's so valuable.
You've changed brands, you've changed companies, you've changed power provider. It's
a
huge effect.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's say you're PowerShop. You've got a successful app out in the market. You're getting customers by the dozens and they're all prepaying power and buying Melbourne Cup power just like that. What do you do now? Your app is out there.
What's your strategy now? You improve your app. It's not native on the iPad. It's still got, you know, it's a got a bit of clunkiness to it.
They've got their MVP out, but
they've got to keep improving. I'm not sure if it's ready for iPhone 6 yet or 6 Plus.
Yeah.
But they'll have an
Android version?
I'm pretty sure they would. I haven't checked, do they? Yeah. Do you use PowerShop? Yeah, okay. We've got someone else in the room.
We have two producers today.
Yeah. Do you like it, Alex? Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
So I guess that's the thing as well as a product. That product should come with a product roadmap as well about what we're going to do with it after we launch it. And, you know, I bet you there's not a single app out there that has ever been released with every single feature that they thought might be in it the first time.
And if it did, no one was caring anymore.
That you should be thinking about and following up on. But, you know, I think the state of the industry changes so quickly. New devices are released, new OSs are released that you can't afford to. And it takes a long time to plan to upgrade you know, get up to speed with those changes in the industry that you really can't afford to sit still for very long with any sort of mobile product.
I'll tell you what, I'm just thinking about the PowerShop example and mobile, like improving the app is one part of it, but it's not just about the app, it's about the systems behind the business. So what, you know, if the PowerShop app could tell me, see, the problem is I get the data a day after it's happened. So I look at it and I go, Lindy, God, we used a lot of power yesterday. What happened? She's like, oh, I don't know. We used the dishwasher and the dryer and I had the heat. But what would be cool is if it knows my kind of average on a weekly basis, seasonally adjusted, and I could get reports in real time. It could ping me, like give me a notification saying, hey, Danny, just letting you know, it's 7 o'clock tonight. We can see you've used 10% more electricity than you have another day. Go look around your house and work out what you've left on.
Really happened is you were charging like 15 mobile devices.
Yeah.
Had three iMacs.
I think that all that stuff, which is stuff I normally worry about, I'm like, I get another gadget, I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to plug this in and pay for it. It's so minimal in the end.
I have two chargers by my bed at the moment.
It's like, I think the stuff that makes a difference is, I think I've worked out, it's the hot water, electrical hot water, and the heating and the, you know, the split systems and the air conditioning and stuff. I think they're the real suckers.
Cold showers at the Gorick House.
It's, you know, the idea, it's not just cool from a mobile perspective, but I think it drives behavioural change. And that's what mobile can do better than anything else, because it's a phone that you got with you all the time and you're looking at it and it can notify you. And that's, I think, a big deal. Yeah. So, you know, like a banking app, you know, you can get notified when you go over your credit limit, or you can get notified when you set, you know, you have a budget threshold, or even on a mobile plan, you know, you'll get text messages from, you know, Optus or Telstra or whoever saying, hey, you've used 50% of your data this month and you've still got, you know, 20 days to go. Slow down. That'll change behavior. So all this stuff can change behavior.
Yeah. It's a really interesting point, because every other channel that you can think of, you know, TV, desktop, at some point throughout your day, you're removed from that as a channel, whereas mobile, you always have with you. It's always the medium where they can...
And that cycle is going to increase now that the watches are coming.
Mm. Yeah, and Keith mentioned earlier as well, the mobile device, what's great about it is it's actually full of sensors that can tell you more information about people than ever before. And that's because it's with you all the time, but also because the hardware itself allows you to track all these things. And Danny, while you're saying it can tell you... you know, that you're using your power too much on average based on what you've been using so far. I read recently on LinkedIn, there was an article about these two guys who are trying to build technology around for older people to fit out their homes so that they get used to what the temperature is, what they usually, what appliances they normally use, and this all goes through the app, which then if something changes and it's out of the normal, you know, routine for them, it notifies their families to say, hey, you know, their routine's changed, maybe give them a call. And this is stuff that, you know, we haven't been able to do before. So before, we're just tracking website data. Only when people come to your website can you track what they do. Now you can track what they do wherever they are.
It's passive tracking.
It's passive tracking. Yeah. And it's not to, you know, monitor people or spy on people. It's more to help, you know, yeah, drive behavioral change or be able to really make things smart. You know, Danny, you've talked about this at some of your talks where smart things aren't going to be smart until all this data is used in smart ways and connect to each other. So that's the other level of what you think about with your mobile strategy is, sure, you get an app out there and it's sitting in the market and it's doing well. Then let's start to think about what else it can do. And now that you're getting data from people using your app, what else can you improve? As well as looking at what the new technologies are. It's just what they're already doing.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that next step when all these apps with all this data can provide context to each other. And then you've got your basically your home automation systems kicking in as well. And basically I see them as like the hive mind that where all this data is going to feed into. So like my phone knows when I'm in my car, my phone knows where I parked, things like that. So I just want it to know that when I go out, turn everything off, you know, turn everything on low power. When I come home, turn everything back on. Or it knows I've left work and I'm on my way home. It knows my route. It knows how long I'm going to take based on traffic. And it can do things like warm up the coffee machine or cool down the ice
box. Talk a lot about your coffee machine on this podcast.
It's a big part.
Yeah,
of my life.
Agree. I totally agree. I'm moving into a new house next month, and I'm hoping that I can install those Nest
house party.
No house party. I've got enough kids to have a house party. But
you can get some Nest products.
I think I'll probably get a Nest. Yeah,
very jealous.
Because I actually bought my dad a Nest, and it didn't work with his system.
Are you going to get thermostat thermostat.
Yeah. But that's another thing that learns your behaviour. So it learns. It knows. It kind of works out when you're in the house or out of the house based on motion. Mm-hmm. And it knows how you, based on the temperature outside, the temperature you like to set it inside, and it'll automatically warm up and cool down and turn off. I mean, I'm constantly just going to the thermostat and like turning it down. It's like a fight with my wife on that thermostat. She's up and down. And also the, you know, lights drives me crazy. I mean, I remember very clearly my dad tells this story to a lot of people. You know, when I was living at home, I used to walk around in, you know, boxer shorts and a t-shirt and just keep the heating on. And now in my house, like, and leave all the lights on. And now in my house, I'm like, I'm that person, like my dad, just turning everything off.
Yeah.
Turn off the lights. You know.
Put on a jumper.
But why, you know, why should the lights be on if you're not in the room? Like, that is so simple to solve.
Yeah, exactly.
And just easy stuff like that will make a big impact, A, on your bill, B, on the environment.
Yeah.
You know, if everyone did that. Sure. And so, technology like this, you know, can make a big impact. And we've got to relate that back to mobile strategy. But I think it's about broadly, not just, oh, do we need an app because that's what customers want, but how does mobile fit into our business?
Yep.
And that's the question that the mobile strategy needs to answer. How does mobile fit into my business? And can I change my business because people are mobile and they can get to my brand all the time?
Yeah. Can we leverage these little supercomputers in everybody's pockets? Yep. Yeah.
Can I?
Well, it's exactly this slide. Oh, okay. Referring back to that, there's a Ben Evans presentation talking about mobile is eating the world, which is great. And it talks about how these other waves of tech create these brand new businesses. And there's a great slide that talks about how, you know, when photography came along, color photography, life as a business was, you know, sprung up. With color printing, obviously there was a full range of glossy magazines, and then when internet, kind of the internet boom and social happened, things like BuzzFeed came around. They're all media businesses. And so I think it's, you know, in terms of relating that conversation back to mobile strategy, it's thinking about what's happening not just in the mobile industry, but in the much wider tech industry and just
every industry.
Every possible industry, and how that is going to change your how users interact with your brand.
Yeah.
Like it's not just about considering mobile only either. It's mobile in the context of everything else.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, well, Ben Evans talks about how, you know, if you look at Uber or Airbnb, they are still their core business. Airbnb is about travel, but they've embraced technology to the point where, you know, that is what makes their core business different. And I think that's how every industry is going to start to change, is as mobile becomes infrastructure, as it becomes the norm, and it kind of already is, but even further than that, when we just expect everything to be working on our mobile, that's when every industry will have changed. And Ben Evans talks about how when these things happen, you stop talking about the technology, like, you know, railways, when they came out, people talked about railways a lot, but now we don't talk about it because you just expect the trains to be there. Mm. And steel, when steel came out, everything was about steel, and now we don't talk about steel, but it's everywhere. So there's going to be a point where we stop talking about mobile and we just expect that things work wherever we are, and that everything's real time.
Life, everyday part of life. It just works.
Well, it is already, isn't it?
It's going to
be. I mean, really, I think for our generation, it is part of life.
Yeah. 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 I think for the people that are at the head of it, it's here. I think it's just, we've just got to wait for the rest of the population who's not, maybe not be as into tech as we are to kind of catch up a little bit to it. And then the big businesses to catch up as well. Some of the other big ones. It's an incredibly exciting time. Do we have any other points we want to carry?
The only thing I wanted to raise, did you see the product that Amazon launched today? What's called the Echo? Have you seen about that?
Oh, I saw a headline about it. I didn't read it.
It's this kind of cylinder, and you plug it in, and it obviously goes on the internet. It's like Siri or Google Now, and you just talk to it and you say, hey,
it's a cylinder.
What's the Alexa? That's right. Oh, you can call it whatever you want. Okay. So you say, hey, Alexa, what's the time? And she just says, oh, the time is 2:30, 34. Hey, Alexa, will it rain tomorrow? Yes, just this kind of omnipresent voice. But
I can't let you do that.
It's a kind of really interesting product. I'm not sure it's going to be a big hit because we've basically got all this technology in our mobile phones already.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why you'd want to have something like this just kind of plugged in your kitchen and how it'd be useful. But I guess Amazon aren't shy about trying things, as evidenced by the phone and the set-top box and the they don't have TVs yet. They got the Fire TV.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering if you guys had seen this and what you thought about it. You should watch the video.
Yeah.
I mean, put it in the show notes. Do we have show notes?
I wonder what their driver was for that project, considering you can do all of that already.
Yeah.
Siri and Google.
It feels a bit like a project that sort of got started, you know, like 18 months ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago. And they're like, oh, God, we're too far down. We've we built the website. We've got some samples. Let's just press go.
Just do it. Yeah.
I think, well, it's like this is one of those things where having a mobile strategy means that you have to be willing to try things. And the great thing about technology or software is that you push something out, you can test it and then improve it. I'm not sure about the Echo because, again, it's another device, which is really weird because everything we can do on our phones now. But it is essentially testing that, what else can we do with software and see how it goes. And if you're as big as Amazon, you can afford to test it. If you're not as big, then maybe you do smaller tests.
Just look at Samsung. They try everything.
Yeah.
They brought out a phone now with a screen on the side.
I saw that, yeah.
It actually looks pretty neat.
It does look neat, but you kind of ask what are they trying to solve?
And when you drop it.
Yeah.
And it is a when. It's not an if. To try and design a case around that. But, this Echo, I want to watch videos about it.
You got to watch a video, but it's a bit of a fun. Do you watch the video? It's a pretty funny video. It's like this whole happy family, like their life revolves around Alexa.
It's their only friend.
They don't have a TV. All their couches face the Echo.
I mean, what's the point of differentiation though, do you think, from just a mobile? Is it the fact that it's a speaker?
The fact is that no one bought the Amazon mobile, so they're trying.
Shots fired.
There's probably inside these are all the fires. It's just like a big fire in a big can. With some wiring to power up the lights.
it's kind of like Amazon. It's like Amazon's kind of, it's their little ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Apple definitely has an ecosystem. Android is building one, and this is part of Amazon's ecosystem. This is their us too. You know, if you bought into the whole Kindle and the Fire for some reason, and their tablet and all that kind of stuff, well, this will fit right in. We'll go with your Amazon Prime account, which a lot of people in America have, from what I hear. We don't have it here, but it's just that kind of, okay, if you're already in our ecosystem here, you can have this too. And for some reason, we made it like a big battery. I don't know how to describe it. It's just a big black tube. with colours.
Something like how many? It's got like about 100 microphones on it. How many microphones is it?
Good grief!
It's got a lot of microphones. Apparently, it's good at hearing.
It has all it's the microphones,
and it's also a Bluetooth speaker. So I guess that's the thing. Like, it's a Bluetooth speaker for $100, which is probably not bad, and it also does all this other stuff. But still, feels like a solution in need of a problem.
Yeah, it's $100 if you're a Prime member. Yeah. Otherwise, it's $200. Yeah. And it's by invitation only.
Yeah, so well, that's creating. Also weird. Like, have they actually made it? Or is this just a kind of a, you know, an engineering prototype?
That's interesting. If they can get it to understand me better than Google now, I'm listening.
Well, when's your birthday?
May. Cool. Yeah, I think, look, it's an incredibly exciting time. I think if you're not on the bandwagon now, it's not too late to jump on. Obviously, self-advertising, yeah, come and talk to us.
Give us a call.
Yeah, give us a call. We'll talk your head off. We're people whose life it is to stay ahead of these sorts of things. And yeah, it's actually really, really good fun, really exciting and great time to be alive. So yeah, I've got a little bit of an announcement to make. I'm leaving the show. No. Today is our final regular episode for the season or the year. I think we're calling it a season.
Yeah, let's call it a season.
Let's call it a season. Thanks, Liz. So we're going to do one more sort of wrap-up episode later on this year, where I think we all get together and be nostalgic and look back and probably drink a lot. And we'll give predictions, things like that. So you can hear what the people on the edge are thinking.
Exactly. About 2015.
Exciting year.
Whoa, exactly. New Avengers movie. That's what I'm looking forward to. Sneak peek. Cool. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll catch you all soon.
Thanks.
See ya.
Thanks.